Since 1988, Whitetail Institute has been perfecting annual and perennial seed products specifically for hunters who plant food plots. Their seeds have been engineered to be palatable, high in protein, and extremely attractive to deer. Whether you live in the Deep South or Midwest farm country, they have products that will help you grow your best food plot yet. For more information about their seeds and their blends, visit whitetailinstitute.com. Enter the discount code SE15 for 15% off.
When it's time to go after the biggest buck of your life, you need gear that will not only make your life easier, but that you can also depend on for years to come. Lone Wolf Custom Gear has been the leader in mobile hunting equipment for over 40 years and started out right here in Wisconsin. From inventing the climbing stick to perfecting ultralight tree stands, Lone Wolf Custom Gear continues to innovate and put the best mobile hunting equipment on the market with a ton of fantastic accessories that allow you to customize your gear exactly how you want it. Whether it be the high-end DeQuisto series sticks and stands or the affordable Patriot series, you'll have the peace of mind knowing that you're hanging off of gear that was 100% made in the USA, right here in the Midwest, in fact, and has been designed and perfected by some of the best whitetail hunters in the world. Not to mention, it has an unconditional lifetime warranty that's so good your grandkids and even great-grandkids will be able to use it when they're hunting. Go build your kit out today at lonewolfcustomgear.com.
If there's one app that sees significantly more use on my phone than any other, it's the Onyx Hunt app. And this time of year, that couldn't be more true. Whether I'm still out doing some postseason whitetail scouting or trying to pinpoint where the gobble I just heard might have come from, or seeing whether that field full of strutters is on public or private, Onyx Hunt is my number one tool when I'm making plans on the fly during the day or creating a game plan with buddies for the next morning. This time of year, I absolutely love the compass feature that helps me figure out exactly which direction a gobble came from. And when I'm driving around, I keep Onyx open on my dash thanks to its compatibility with Apple CarPlay and Android Auto so that I can see where I'm at and drop pins on the go while searching for turkeys. Head on over to onyxmaps.com to learn more and get signed up for a free 7-day trial. And while you're there, be sure to check out the entire Onyx family, which includes Onyx fish and trout routes. Turkey season is here, and when it comes time to hit the woods and chase some gobbles, you need gear that's as ready to hunt as you are. That's why I'm proud to be partnered with Huntworth Gear. This spring, I'll be running around the woods in the Durham lightweight pants, which have been my go-to pants for everything the last couple of years. They've got a waterproof seat and knee panels that keep you dry when setting up, and breathable, quick-drying fabric to keep you comfortable after a long walk through tall, dewy grass, or when you're putting on the miles looking for that lonely long beard. On top, I'll be wearing the Grayling Heat Boost hoodie if it's cold and the Camden Lightweight hoodie when it's hot. And don't forget the Ames Lightweight gloves with fingerless index and thumb holes that give you the dexterity you need to run those calls unimpeded all season long. Go build your kit out today at huntworthgear.com or visit the hunting section of your local farm and fleet or fleet farm to find it in person. Southwest Wisconsin is home to one of the most unique trout fisheries in the country, with thousands of miles of spring-fed streams twisting their way through valleys, pastures, and prairies. And one of the best ways to experience this fishery is with a fly rod in hand. Good Chance Fly Fishing is your guide to all that the Driftless has to offer, whether you're an experienced angler or just looking to get out and try something new. To find more info and book your trip, visit goodchanceflyfishing.com.
If you've listened to this show before, I'm sure you've noticed that if there's one thing that keeps coming up over and over again, it's the importance of public lands and waters. Shoot, I'd even venture to guess that 90% of what we talk about in this show takes place on public lands. We all love the challenges we face and the memories we create in these wild places, and we need folks who are in our corner to protect them. That's why we're proud to have partnered with the good folks over at the Wisconsin Chapter of Backcountry Hunters and Anglers. The Wisconsin BHA Chapter was formed to provide a voice to hunters and anglers throughout Wisconsin that want to protect our public land legacy, and everyone involved works their tails off to protect public lands and access those public lands and waters. Stay informed on all things public lands, the issues facing our public lands, policies that might affect them, and to cross paths with some of the coolest outdoorsmen out there, I highly encourage you to join the Wisconsin Chapter of Backcountry Hunters and Anglers, or at least the chapter of whatever state you live in. To join BHA, visit backcountryhunters.org/join, and to learn more about what we have going on here in the Badger State, visit backcountryhunters.org/Wisconsin. What is going on, everyone? Welcome back to another episode of the Wisconsin Sportsman Podcast, which is brought to you by Lone Wolf Custom Gear. I'm your host, Pierce Nellis, and this is your home for all things hunting, fishing, and conservation in the Badger State. Folks, I hope you're all doing well. I hope you are in a turkey mindset right now, because I certainly am. My good buddy Drew Schlemm is on the line with me. I know he's in a turkey mindset right now. Drew, how are we doing today?
Good, man. I'm happy to be back on. Thanks for having me.
Dude, stoked to have you back, man. Every spring when turkey season rolls around, buddy, like I know we brought you on the first time, which we were just talking about how long ago it or how it doesn't feel that long ago, and you know, it was several years ago, but I think the first time I had you on was like November or December or something. It was like during predator season. We were talking coyotes and predator hunting and tactics and stuff like that. And since then, you've been our perennial turkey guest. So hopefully it's a nice little break from the predator talk and whatnot. I'm sure we'll dabble in that a little bit as well. Actually, on that note, dude, one of the things that I've been chewing on, and I'm waiting on a response from one of the guys from Turkeys for Tomorrow on potentially doing a full episode on it, but I'm curious, as a guy who does a lot of predator hunting, I'm assuming in the same area or similar areas that you're also doing your turkey hunting.
Yep.
Have you noticed a big impact in the number of birds and the turkey populations and stuff through doing so much more coyote harvest and stuff like that?
Yeah, I think it certainly makes a difference. Even if it's just pressure, you know, I've seen places that have lots of coyotes. I frequently see where the coyotes will run them back up into the trees in the mornings and mess up your hunt. And I think that, you know, I think coyotes might be lower on the list compared to, you know, bobcats and nest raiders and things. Mm-hmm. But I think that they certainly can cause a lot of ruckus, and they will. They're one of the only, you know, bobcats and coyotes are about the only two things that are going to kill live turkeys on the ground.
Right.
You know,
right.
So I think just the pressure, if you have, you know, coyotes all over the place, it's going to make your turkeys weird. It's going to make them extra leery and, you know, cautious. Mm-hmm. And like I said, I've seen lots of times where coyotes have ran turkeys back up in trees in the morning after they flew down, or kept them in the trees a lot longer or something of that nature.
Yeah, for sure. Dude, my first turkey hunt ever, I had a coyote do that. I had this Tom that was just going nuts up on the limb. He pitched down, worked out into the field, like up above me, kind of on the crest of this hill, and he was like 60, 70 yards or so. Goes over the lip, and then all of a sudden, well, I was with my buddy Logan, and he starts dropping back. We're going to try and call the bird back down the hill.
Yeah.
And this Tom comes running up over the hill, and then he flies up into a tree. I'm like, what the hell? And this coyote was on his tail, sure enough. And then coyote came in, heard Logan's calling, ran to about 6 yards from me, and that was the last thing he ever did. But I always wondered about that, just from the, like, not so much the coyotes killing turkeys standpoint, but coyotes killing the possums and the nest raiders and the raccoons and stuff like that. You guys, let me ask you this too, because I was thinking about this earlier on that same topic. Do you get much, or do you guys get, I don't know what the proper term is, I don't want to say like bycatch, but like when you're calling coyotes, do you get very many raccoons and other stuff coming in just to see what it is or investigate?
Raccoons, yeah. Mm-hmm. Sometimes, you know, bobcats occasionally. Other than that, not really. Just pretty much raccoons a lot. I mean,
sure.
But then other than that, no, not a whole lot. And I use a lot of vocal sounds, so I'm usually not getting too many strange callings.
Mm-hmm, for sure. Yeah, I was curious about that, because I didn't realize until recently that raccoons were so call susceptible.
Oh, yeah.
Like,
they're a
hoot call. Yeah. Yeah, my cousin was down in Iowa, and he was saying he just like ran out, found a den tree or two, and he just set up and waited, you know, 5 minutes, if that, and they just come crawling out of there like rats. And I was like, huh.
Yeah.
I had no idea. I was always, our extended family was big into coon hunting, but they did it with dogs. And so I was always of that mindset of like, oh, well, that's how you coon hunt. But
exactly.
Yeah. I didn't realize the calls work just as well.
But, yeah. It's fun.
Dude, I believe it, man. Well, dude, for folks who haven't listened to our previous episodes, can you tell us a little bit about yourself, where you're from, what you do with the Predator Podcast, and all that good stuff?
Yeah. So I'm Drew Schlim. I'm located in southern Wisconsin. Pierce and I grew up real close to each other and didn't know each other until this whole podcast venture brought us together. Mm-hmm. And yeah, so I obviously predator hunting is kind of my bread and butter. I, you know, really just enjoy the predator hunting side of everything. But truthfully, turkeys might be my favorite thing to hunt. I'm not sure. It's a toss up between turkeys and predators, but I love to chase turkeys. I usually take several kids, first time hunters, buddies, relatives, whoever, each spring, and have a full about 7-8 weeks of turkey hunting. And I've been doing that since I was 16 years old, pretty much. So as soon as I could drive, I was, you know, volunteering to take new hunters, take kids, take, whoever had a tag and was willing to go and get up early in the morning, I'd be happy to take out. I just enjoy seeing people be successful in the turkey woods. And there's a lot of correlations. If I always use the example, if guys are really good at turkey hunting, they'd be a great predator hunter, because a lot of the same calling situations happen, you know, where they hang up in a certain spot where they can see things like that, that a turkey hunter would really understand, that I think a lot of hunters wouldn't, or an elk hunter, of course. It's all turkeys, elk, predators. There's a lot of similarities between calling all those things. And of course, interacting and calling is, you know, a fun thing no matter what you're doing. So of course, turkeys are fun.
Definitely, man. Yeah, I was looking through photos this morning from last season, and I was like, man, I cannot wait to get back out there. Just have those warm sunrises, and although I was going to say the dewy grass, except for that morning that you and I went out there, and I chose the hikers rather than the knee high. Got pretty dang soaked, but yeah, dude, that's awesome, man. And like, super cool that you've been able to take so many people out, especially getting the kids engaged and everything, and introducing folks to the sport. On that note, man, like, youth season's obviously the way that we're kicking things off here. This will be my first year helping a new hunter during our Learn to Hunt during the youth weekend as well. Any tips or advice for new hunters getting out there for the first time this spring?
Yeah, honestly, some of the things that I'm very persistent on when it comes to first time new hunters, kids, I'm very particular about how I prepare them to shoot. Just because I think one of the biggest mistakes people make with new hunters, kids, whoever, is making them scared of recoil. Just because turkey guns kick, turkey loads kick, doesn't matter if you, like, people think, oh, a youth 20 gauge, yeah, that's a nice small gun for them to use, but it also kicks like a mule with a 3-inch turkey load in it.
Yep.
So, one thing that I do pretty religiously is I always make kids practice with them. Just because, no offense to some of the parents and things out there, but I've hunted with lots of kids. I mean, I would hate to know, 20, maybe more. And I've seen, I had a girl show up with a 3.5-inch 10 gauge once. I've had I had a kid show up once that was afraid to shoot. So we had birds come in 2 or 3 different times, and he never fired a shot because he was scared to shoot. And obviously, this is pre me shooting with people. So I learned like that, you know, it's nobody's fault. Just some people just don't know, you know, they've never been around turkey hunting. Parents are trying to do their best to get their kid out there. And they're just doing what they think is right, is give them a turkey gun and throw a turkey load in it and say, shoot that box, you know? And, it oftentimes results in a really poor experience for the kids and results in them being afraid to shoot. And then people miss. So that's number one. If someone's going to shoot a 20 gauge, a 410, honestly, it doesn't matter what it is. I'm making them shoot a 2¾-inch dove load, you know, a 7.5 trap load. Doesn't matter if it's 410, 240, whatever. 410, 20 gauge, doesn't matter. I'm making them shoot a super light trap load. If it's possible to have a red dot, I think a red dot has increases success astronomically. In my experience, kids get excited. Their head's not down on the gun. I've seen kids that just cannot figure out shooting open sights. It's just a really hard concept to explain if they're not comfortable with, you know, and been around guns for long. Mm-hmm. But so a red dot can make a huge difference. And that's been, you know, I think that's one of the other things that makes a big difference. And I, if possible, if I can put it in like a bog death grip, some type of clamping system on a tripod for the kids so they don't have to hold the gun up, so they can clamp it in. It takes some of the recoil away, all those things. And the other thing is that I make them shoot at a realistic turkey target so they understand what a turkey's head looks like and they understand what they're shooting at. Like I got some right here, actually. I just bought some for this.
There we go.
I always make them shoot at those just so they understand what they're shooting at. Mm-hmm. Because when you're in the blind in the dark in the morning and you're trying to explain to a kid to shoot him in the head, it's just hard to explain from shooting at a circle or at a paper, you know, turkey silhouette, or someone traced their hand on a box, you know, all the things that we've seen. Mm-hmm. I think that's the biggest part for me is making sure that all that part is the hardest part for kids in my experience, or even a new hunter in general, is the shooting part. Because turkeys, when they come in, you know, usually for youth season, they're coming into the decoys, you know, and a lot of times they don't stand still very long. And if they aren't comfortable with the shooting part, it can really throw the hunt into a tailspin in a hurry. Mm-hmm. And just understanding what they're shooting at. I think a very common issue and mistake a lot of people make is they want to make the turkeys pick their heads up and, you know, stand there nice stretched out and let them shoot them. Well, me personally, if I can get one that is full strut, standing still, not moving, I'm telling them to shoot every time, because mm-hmm. it is a so much higher percentage shot when they're standing, when they're not moving. But as soon as they start jumping on a decoy and bouncing around and head bobbing, you know how it can go. I mean, it can make it tough for anybody, let alone, yep. you know, somebody who's never shot before. Yeah, I think that's the nuts and bolts of it. The other thing is just making sure your setup is good. I mean, you got a solid blind that it's nice and dark in there that they can't see. You don't have every window open, you know, because the kids are going to move. And if I can get the sun at my back, or at least not right in our face, that is, you know, a big deal, to make sure that you're concealed, because, again, they're going to move and they have to move. Otherwise, it's not going to be fun for them if you're sitting mm-hmm. there telling them they can't move and, you know, you got to sit still. And then they get cold, you know, those mornings and the youth hunts and stuff, it gets cold. And yeah, I've seen it, you know, where they've gotten cold and it doesn't make it very fun. You know, and then the last thing I would think would be the easiest part, but like just making sure there's birds there, like just doing your due diligence to make sure they're going to have a good experience. Like if you're going to go out there and not hear a gobble, not see any turkeys, like it's not going to be fun for the kid. They're going to get cold. They're going to have to go to the bathroom. They're going to, you know, and then the next morning they're not going to want to go. So it just really putting a lot of effort into that experience, I think is, you know, I think that's what it all is, you know, the shooting, the preparing, all of that. The kid never knows when they shoot a 3-inch turkey load, when they shoot the turkey. I mean, mm-hmm. I have never even had a kid notice that I put a different bullet in the gun, and after the fact, none of them have ever said like, "Ooh, that kicked," or "that, you know, that was way worse," or, you know, nothing.
Right.
Like, they just don't know because they're excited and in the moment. And then now you created a positive experience. Like, you didn't, knock them over backwards with a 12 gauge. You didn't, you know, a 3 and 3.5 inch 12 gauge. I've seen kids get knocked over. I've seen all kinds of different things happen. And it just is not an accident when those people don't want a turkey hunt anymore.
Yeah, for sure. Dude, those are awesome tips. And yeah, I couldn't agree more on the you know, shooting with the target load first and getting that just out of their head entirely. Because especially like even as adults, if you've had target panic, whether it be with your bow or you get scope kissed or something, and then all of a sudden you're leaning back a little bit further and your form's a little off and your accuracy suffers and stuff. Like, yeah, setting them up for success by not being afraid for that and just getting that out of their brain entirely is huge, man. And that was one of the things, especially like talking with Ben O'Brien. He was talking about his 9-year-old son last year shooting his first turkey. And he was like, just hold, you know, put your dot on his head and squeeze. Don't think about the recoil, because when it goes off, you're not going to feel it. And it couldn't be more true, especially, yeah, when you set them up for success with trap loads or target loads and stuff like that to get them going, man. I like it. Early season, what's your decoy setup looking like? Do you like to, we're dealing with typically birds that are unpressured, which is good, but also we're dealing with birds that have a lot of hens to choose from. So what's right. What's the decoy strategy look like for you?
So it's going to kind of depend on what I'm after for birds. In a lot of cases, early season, they're still pretty flocked up. You know, there might be anywhere from 8 to 20 toms, you know, and if there's more than probably 3 or 4 toms, I'm going to use a strutter decoy and some hens. And to be more specific, I'll use a strutter over a laydown hen with a feeder and probably one other hen. So 3 hens, a strutter decoy facing straight at the blind. And then if there's a bunch of, that's if there's a bunch of toms, like I would say more than 3 or 4. And then if there's a smaller, like 2, 3, 4, or 1, I'm not very common, I guess, that I would hunt a single bird this early. But maybe I would if it was in a really good spot or if I really had a good idea on it. But then I would probably use a Jake decoy over a hen, with a feeder hen and another hen probably. So that's pretty much all I would use. I don't think I would use any other thing besides those two situations. That's, you know, going to cover most of your situations for early season in my experience. I think if you are really trying to pull birds a long ways, you know, or you're in a big field or something, a strutter is always a better option. I just think a strutter is probably a safe option early. I would say if you aren't sure what to use, I think a strutter can be a safe option early in the year. But it just totally depends on the situation.
Yeah, totally. Even like a lone strutter, it's got to be with a hen.
Right.
Or at least one hen.
I mean, yeah. And if they are alone, they're probably split off from a group or something.
When it comes to setting up decoys and everything, I'm assuming it's similar, but like, what's your range, especially with youth hunters? Like,
yeah.
Do you try and get them in pretty close? Do you try and space them out so that pattern has time to expand a little bit more and get a little bit more coverage? What do you like to do there?
Yeah, that's another one. That's another good question. For youth hunters, I know a lot of people think I need to have my decoys at 10 yards, so they're right up here close. I personally disagree. I would never put them closer than 15. I always try to step them off to 20, and even if they're at 25, I'm fine with it. Mm-hmm. Like, if they're not right almost in the blind with you, it makes it so much easier. You're not so close, so they don't maybe hear every little thing. And the biggest thing too, like what you kind of mentioned there, is it gives a chance for your pattern to open up a little bit. Now, I would encourage you to know your gun a little bit, to know maybe, you know, some, depending on your setup, maybe you're shooting a modified choke or a full choke or something. Maybe it's 20 yards, but kind of figure out where that, you know, basketball sized pattern is to where that's where I would put my decoys, because again, you're asking a kid to shoot a turkey at 10 yards with a, you know, throwing a baseball at them. There's a high chance they're going to miss.
Mm-hmm.
In my experience, that's one of the biggest mistakes people make with youth, is they put the decoys at 8 to 12 yards and you'll see the pattern smash the ground, you know, and they just miss. Usually they just miss them close. Yep. I mean, they miss them barely. But I think if you have those decoys out there more at 20 to 25 yards, I think you're setting yourself up, you know, for a little more reasonable shot and a little more expectation. Since I've started doing that, man, I haven't had many kids miss. You know, it's always going to happen too. I mean, that's one thing that I think some people get a sour taste in their mouth from taking kids, because they don't like when they miss. They don't like when they screw up. They don't like, you know, my experience, it is totally part of it. And if a kid can still have a positive experience and miss, then you really did a good job, you know? So not getting frustrated yourself, not, you know, not throwing in the towel when they quit, showing them that you can keep going. Mm-hmm. You know, I think those things make a big difference too. I've heard that's all, this is why I don't take youth hunters, you know, yada, yada. To me, if that turkey lives, so be it. Like, we can hunt him another day. Like, I don't, if that turkey getting shot today is not going to decide whether we had a great hunt or not. You still can have a great hunt and miss or mess up or not get a shot, you know? So
yep.
I think that's a big part that adults get more wrapped up in the success of the hunt than the kid does, you know, and get too worried about the success versus just making sure the kid has a good experience.
Yeah, totally. Best part of missing a bird is that you get to keep turkey hunting, right?
Exactly.
Like, that's the fun of it, man. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Like, I like that mindset of, like, cause I mean, coming from a guy who missed way too many birds last year. well, yes, I was really tired as a result. It made for one heck of a couple of weeks there that, you know, I was able to continue hunting and continue. Because that's, I mean, it's not just shooting the turkey, right? That's the best part of turkey hunting. It's the waking right. up early. It's the getting in there. It's hearing the woods come to life and wake up every morning and getting to see all the cool stuff that we get to see in the turkey woods. And yeah, if you get to do that for another morning, then like there are far worse things that can happen for sure.
Yeah, but, absolutely.
Yeah.
Hey guys, I just wanted to take a quick sec to tell you about Lone Wolf Custom Gear. Lone Wolf Custom Gear is as good as it gets when it comes to mobile hunting equipment. Whether you're a saddle or stand guy, public land or private, Lone Wolf Custom Gear has a set of sticks, a stand, a camera arm, and any number of accessories to get you closer to your target buck. To make it even better, everything is 100% USA sourced and made right here in the Midwest, and it's even assembled right across the river in Iowa by hunters who love chasing deer just as much as you do. To build your kit today, go visit lonewolfcustomgear.com. Now, let's get back to the episode.
On the note of like missed shots and stuff like that, how are you tending to see, so let's say, you know, things work right off the roost, we get a bird coming in early in the morning, things are playing out nicely, something goes wrong with the shot, all right, crap, now it's 8 o'clock or whatever it is, moving into that mid-morning time frame throughout the day. What's your go-to then as the day progresses with these early season birds and trying to find them later on in the day?
Yeah, I would say late morning can be actually a really good time for especially early season when they're flocked up like that. If those hens are starting to nest, it seems like they can kind of get a little sick of sitting around, I guess, and it seems like you can get them fired up, you know, and I mean, you do got to get close to them. It's not like they're just going to come piling across the field and come piling in, but if you can get close to them, it seems like, especially I think if you get a big group of birds, it seems like some of them toms will split away, you know, and come check it out or try to pull another hen into their group or, you know, whatever it might be. But I'm going to try to get where I know that they want to be. Whether it's me driving around and spotting them and making a play on them, getting close to them or watching them and seeing where I think they're going to go, getting ahead of them. You know, with a kid, it's not like you're just going to slip in there and, you know, put a stalk on them. you know, in my experience, that is really, really a low odds hunt. But if I can just get in where I think they might be, throw a strutter out, you know, get it where they can see it. And, you know, I've seen it where it can work. Now it is harder. Sometimes just being patient and you're blind, you know, till 7-8 o'clock can be a better option, especially if you know there's a bunch of birds around. But, you know, I've seen it go a lot of ways, but usually youth hunting, I'm much more patient, as far as, you know, sitting there a little longer in the morning. You know, if I'm hunting myself, you know, if those birds don't work like I want them to right off the roost, there's a good chance I'm ripping somewhere else or moving right away. But mm-hmm. It seems like with the kids, especially if you've scouted and done your due diligence and you know those birds like to be where you're at, sometimes you just got to hang tight a little bit longer. When there's nothing happening, make sure the kid can go to the bathroom and, you know, pop out the back of the blind to go to the bathroom and just be patient. But, you know, I think I more so try to find the right situation if I can. I'm not going to take a kid on a mile long loop to try to get around, you know, like I would probably spend a little more time looking around, find something that I think is going to be a better, higher odds and, you know, easier, I guess maybe, is a word for it. But again, you don't want to take this kid on a mile long loop to crawl through wet grass and, you know, they're wet, they're cold, they're tired, they're all the things, you know. No kid is really used to ever getting up at 3 o'clock in the morning. So, we have to keep those things in mind, but if I can just get where they want to be, I mean, that's the main thing. The other thing is if the kid wants to go home, go home. Like sure. if they're ready to be done hunting, don't push them to keep hunting or you're going to just, again, wear them out. You know, I would rather just say, hey, we'll get them tomorrow, you know, and then go the next morning. You know, if it, and a lot of times in my experience by 10 o'clock, man, kids are spent.
Yeah.
Because it's tough on them to get up that early. And if they're any bit excited about it, they probably didn't sleep great. Mm-hmm. You know, so yeah, I would just try to get where they want to be, get a decoy out where I can see them and wrench on the calls a little bit. You never know if you might be able to pull one away.
Yeah, for sure, man. Say you're somebody who's going to be going out on public and maybe you don't want to bring a decoy with you and you're going to be just for safety's sake, you know, trying to run and gun, play a little hide the hen in the woods and anything. Any advice for finding early season birds in the timber? Do you think maybe you can even get away with sleeping in and waiting for those birds to kind of leave the field if the day is going to get warm and go look for some shade or anything like that? Obviously that requires more scouting and, you know, prior knowledge to know that those, you know, scratched up areas or those shady areas or where birds are actively feeding and stuff. But any advice there if you're going to go the no decoy route?
Yeah, what I would do is find a good buddy, a friend, whoever it is, and I would make them come with me. And I would have someone set back and call and try to pull something through me. Mm-hmm. Again, keeping your eyes off a kid. You know, granted, they're still probably going to see you at some point. But you're still going to get an extra time, some extra time to make a shot. That's what I would do. I would take someone with me, have a third person with that's back behind calling, try to bring those birds through you, have them looking past you, you know, something like that, making sure that you're good and hidden. You know, I use those leafy blankets. I'm sure that you've seen when you've been with me. Mm-hmm. I use those leafy blankets pretty religiously over, you know, and throw it over us and throw it over the kids' legs and whatever, just to kind of get hidden as much as possible. Because the better you're hidden, the better shot opportunity they're going to get in most cases. So, yeah, I think that's the way I would go, is I would bring somebody with the call and send them back behind me. Or if I can, I'd leave someone else with the kid if it's, you know, and then I'd go back and call or whatever it might be. That's probably the way I would envision it going.
Totally. I like that strategy a lot. Yeah, that's fun too when you get to kind of play that yo-yo game a little bit with the birds and with your buddies and everything. And it's like, I don't know, that's half the fun of it too, that you always hope the kid gets into as well, as like, oh, this is cool. Like, we're like, once they can kind of like wrap their head around like, oh, here's the strategy of that we're trying to implement here, and here's what we're trying to do, and we're just going to cut them off and be the middleman here for that bird and get them excited about it, is, I mean, I don't know, dude, I'm biased because I love playing hide the hen in the timber and, you know, sneaking around and all that, and putting a little ditch or a knob between me and the birds. But yeah, obviously, like you said, there's that hang up to that is that it requires a heck of a lot more hiking, a heck of a lot more bushwhacking. And if the kid's not up to that, you know, you gotta, definitely take the temperature of the kid and, you know, see what they're up for. Ask him. I would even add to, just from, you know, guiding on a fishing standpoint and everything, one of the biggest things that I've learned is like, ask the kid what, like, where they want to go, like give them a couple options and like, and say, hey, like, here's what I'm thinking. We can do this. We can do that. We can do that. Like, which area looks cooler? Where do you want to go? What sounds better? All these are going to be, which again, you know, do your prior knowledge and scout ahead of time, but, you know, make it engaging for the kid and don't make it so that they're just going along with you and, you know, having to do whatever you say and all that sort of stuff. Like, let them be the hunter that they're trying to figure out to how to be, right?
Yeah, no, I totally agree.
Yeah. When it comes to patterning birds and everything and finding those birds before the season opens up and everything, obviously our fields are, you know, going to be a hot spot and everything. What types of terrain do you tend to?
If you felt stuck trying to lose weight, you're not alone. Enter Weight Loss by Hers. It's designed to support you in reaching your goals. And Hers now offers access to an affordable range of FDA-approved GLP-1 medications, including the Wegovy pill and the Wegovy pen. With Wegovy at Hers, lose up to 20% or more of your body weight when combined with diet and exercise. It helps you regulate your appetite, eat less, and keep weight off. Plus, Wegovy is the first GLP-1 available in a pill, so there are no needles needed. Everything is 100% online through Hers. You'll connect with a licensed provider who will determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your medication is delivered right to your door, no insurance necessary. And it doesn't stop there. Weight Loss by Hers goes beyond medication by offering access to 24/7 messaging with your care team and tons of in-app lifestyle and nutrition tips like recipes, meal plans, fitness videos, sleep content, and more. Even better, with a range of affordable GLP-1 options, Hers makes it simple to find an approach that fits your needs and your budget, if eligible. You'll get a treatment plan personalized to you and unlimited dosage changes as needed. It's weight loss designed to work with your life. Ready to reach your goals? Visit forhers.com/women to get personalized, affordable care that gets you. That's forhers.com/women. forhers.com/women. Weight loss by Hers is not available in all 50 states. Wegovy is the registered trademark of Novo Nordisk AS. To get started and learn more, including important safety information, Wegovy clinical study information, and restrictions, visit forhers.com.
Try and look for these early season birds in. Is it those high, open, you know, they can stand up there and strut all day long if they want to kind of spots, or deeper in the timber? Because obviously we don't have as much foliage. Like, what do you like to look for early season?
I'm definitely keen in on fields. I would say I don't really have a, you know, I guess a set like top bottom, like what I'm necessarily looking for. I'm just looking for birds. I'll hunt them wherever they are. I just, like, biggest thing for me is I'm going to cast a big net and I'm going to find where there's birds. Then I'm going to start to, okay, I know there's some here, some here, some here. And then I'm going to start slowly, like, checking those groups, seeing where they're at, what they're doing. I'll probably check them for probably three days before I start to get a better idea of, like, okay, these are the ones I'm going to hunt this weekend. So, like, this will be my next weekend will be, I'm going to go out Saturday, drive around, just cover ground, find birds, you know, mental note them. Sunday, I'm going to go double check where I saw those birds, maybe check a few new areas. And then by Monday, I've got in mind, like, okay, here's what I'm thinking. Maybe I need to get permission to hunt some places, some new places. And that's, you know, one thing that I do a lot is I'll get permission for a place just for youth hunting. And I got places that I hunt youth season every year that there's piles of birds in, but by first season, they're gone. They're just gone. They split up and they're gone out of these places. And then you'll drive around and you'll see 3-4 toms with 8 hens in every, you know, every other field and around the area. And it's just that big group just split up and they're just all around now. But yeah, so then I'm going to spend a couple days narrowing in on, you know, 2 or 3 different spots probably. And then by like Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, I'm sitting there watching that group of birds every single morning until probably at least a half hour after fly down. And then by that point, I usually have, I've seen it go. I've seen this go where I've watched this group of birds for 7 days. It's the Friday before youth season and the birds are gone. Boom, they're gone. Or there's 2 or 3 left. Like I've seen it where usually if the weather's warm, the weather's good, it's like right around that time where they start to split up. Like sometimes it might be first season, but it's usually somewhere right in that youth season. The mentored hunts are usually safe. They're usually flocked up. But like right around that youth season, the first season is usually that time where those big groups start to split up. And I know that people do this a lot, but like they'll go out the weekend before and listen or, oh, yep, there's birds in here. And then they'll come back the next weekend and they're gone. And they wonder what the heck happened or, you know, it's just that they split up or they moved over the hill or something of that nature. But I think, you know, I know not everybody has the time and a capability to do that, but even if you can check them in the evening to make sure they're still roosting in that area, that can be helpful if you can't check them in the mornings. You know, you got to work, you know, early in the morning, you're to work before it's light out in the morning. Fine. Just check them in the evening, making sure that they're still roosting in that area. You're going to take a gamble on what they're going to do in the morning, but you know, you can still, if they're roosted there, in my experience, if they're roosted there and you can take a kid in there and have gobbling turkeys all over in front of you, regardless of whether you kill one or not, it's going to be a good hunt. And the kid's going to at least enjoy himself. And that's fun. So I'm going to try to do that as best as I can. And when it gets to be those last couple nights before the hunt, I'm checking them morning and night. I'm checking them in the morning. I want to see what they're doing at night. So that way I know come Friday night that, okay, I seen them do this the last 2 nights, the last 3 mornings. Now I can make a very educated guess on where I'm going to go. Then on that Friday night, I'm going to wait till 9, 10 o'clock. I'm going to go in and set my blind up in the dark, take my chairs in, take my decoys in, all my stuff. So that way the next morning that kid can get 15, 20 minutes extra of sleep. We can slip in there, not have a bunch of stuff to carry. We can slip in there and just be right in on the birds. And that works pretty well. I've done it too, where I got up at 2 o'clock in the morning and set up a blind and done all the stuff and then went and picked the kid up. But that's not as fun. But it makes a much easier, just the whole carrying stuff in and setting up and that, you know, it's a lot of stuff to carry. You got a blind and decoys and gun and chairs. Mm-hmm. It's just a lot of stuff. So, I apologize if I'm bouncing around a little bit, but
no, that's not at all.
Kind of how I would attack that. And one thing that I notice from watching these birds for amount of time, and is what I see a lot of times is birds are going to change where they go based on the weather. Whether if it's sunny, like I'm thinking of a specific spot, there's a grove of oak trees where these birds will roost. If it's a sunny morning, they're going to the south, or they're going to go to the north where the sun hits right away. They're going to fly down. They're going to go right there to that spot where the sun hits. If it's cloudy, they're going to go south and go up on the top side and hang out up there. I noticed this, you know, the last few years from watching birds early. So now, because I think a lot of people just think, oh, they're going to go that way or this way, and I don't know why. Which, yes, I know they can do random things, and they will. But at least from my perspective, I'm at least going to make an educated guess. And if I'm wrong, so be it. But now, come Saturday, I'm going to say, okay, is it going to be cloudy or is it going to be sunny? Now, if it's cloudy, I'm going to go up there. And if it's sunny, I'm going to go over here. You know, I'm going to make that call last minute, right before I hunt. I'm not going to set my blind up 2 weeks in advance and go in there and hope for the best. Like, that's not me. I would almost rather not go than just go blindly sit somewhere and hope for the best. Like, I'm going to make sure that there's birds there. The other thing too is if you don't have time to do all the stuff I'm talking about, use trail cameras, use cell cams. You put them in places where you know birds like to hang out. Put them near roost, put them near whatever. Obviously use your woodsmanship to figure out where they need to go, but use cell cameras. You can get, even if they're there once every 3 days, there's probably a pretty good chance they're there every day, you know, because you're not going to picture them every single time, you know, for or sure. They're going to avoid your camera occasionally. But I've seen that a lot too, where I get pictures of a bird, you know, every 4 or 5 days, and I think, oh, well, I'm going to go back there now. And then I get back there and there's way more birds in there than I even knew there was, you know, because they weren't in front of my cameras and I can't see them from anywhere. But yeah, I think those can be a great tool too. But I think when it comes to youth, I'm definitely putting a lot of time in for, you know, scouting and really, really preparing. But also at the same rate, all that scouting preparing also just tees me up for, you know, the first season, because I already was out scouting and now I just kind of know where the birds are at. And I know when they split up, like where to look for them. And I know if they disappear, like, okay, now I move on. If they're in somewhere I can't hunt anymore, I'm moving on. Just all that helps you kind of just stay on them. You know, and like I said, you might not kill them all the time. You might not kill them every time you go, but at least if you can be on them, that's the brunt of it for me, is just making sure that you're at least in the game.
Definitely, dude. Do you keep a hunt journal at all? As you were talking about the roosting and the different conditions and everything, and, you know, I'm sounds like we might be in the same headspace of like, I'll just make a mental note of that and, you know, whatever. Yeah. It'll be fine. But do you document any of that stuff?
I don't. I'm afraid for when my memory starts to go, but I would say the notes I make of it is I talk to my buddies about it.
Sure.
I always am talking to my buddies. This is what I saw. This is what I might take a picture through my, you know, binos or my, you know, spotting scope or whatever. And then I might reference a picture, or my buddy AJ that comes with me pretty much all the time. Like, or we're always talking about it. So like, he'll remind me like, hey, remember those birds that were over there? And I'll be like, oh yeah, good call. Thanks for reminding me. But I probably should keep some type of log, or at least like maybe drop a color-coded onyx pins or something. I do always pin roost areas, I think. Like, I try to. And especially early when you're listening, like when you're listening before it's light out and you're just hearing birds gobble, I usually try to drop pins where those, where they were, because it's funny how different they can sound when they're on the ground and you're looking at your onyx and you're like, where did they come from? And then it's like, oh, it was just those that were up in that corner, you know, or something like that. You know, it's just, it's crazy how much different they can sound when they're on the ground versus in the tree. So just kind of logging all that, you know. And then what I also do too is like, I might come back 2 weeks later and remember that those birds were up over in that corner that I can't see or anything. And I might all of a sudden, ooh, there's birds up on that hill and they're going that direction. I know where they're going, or I have some idea, right? I know you can be wrong. I've been wrong plenty of times, but again, just having an educated guess to get you in the game is better than just throwing a dart at the map and saying, hope for the best, you know?
Yeah. Definitely. And that's, yeah, even if you're just seeing birds in the fields or whatever while you're driving around or whenever it is, like, the number of times I've circled back to like a 3-year-old pin and just been like, oh yeah, there's a turkey pen. I always forget about that. It just kind of blends in with everything else. But I wonder. And you go over there and sure enough, there's like a bunch of fresh scratching, or there's, you know, feathers, or it's a roost tree or something like that. You find one that, you know, you didn't know was there. It's, yeah, I'm constantly dropping all my turkey stuff or turkey pins whenever I see them, dude. When it comes to getting permission, I've talked to several folks who you and I both know and heard from a few people that, well, Drew owns half the county. So he, when it comes to getting permission, certainly you can leverage the, you know, hey, I've got a youth hunter. This is his first time out. We saw some turkeys. Like, you can play that tune a little bit. Any advice you have for getting permission on private land?
Yeah, I would say, if it's a new place and I don't know the people at all, no idea, I'm probably gonna always lead with youth season. Not that it, and when I say lead with youth season, I mean the first time I ever hunt that place, I might youth hunt it, and that would be it. I'm out of there for the year.
Mm-hmm.
And then now the next year, I might ask them, hey, can I hunt here youth season and first season? It just kind of depends. You know, you're going to get a gauge on the person. Is there other people that hunt there? Do they have one guy that comes one season? Do they, as you kind of grow that relationship, you can kind of figure out, you know, how you can maybe hunt there more than what you did. But I have places that I only youth hunt. And still, to this day, I will only youth hunt. And I usually try to find new places every year to youth hunt, especially. And I guess for me, it's always like I'm going to be there this morning and the next morning, and that's it. And I'm out. And I won't be back. I'm going to walk from the road. I'm not going to drive anywhere. I'm going to... I usually will try to follow up with them. Like, if we get one, like, send them a picture of the kid with the turkey, that, you know, big smile, just thanking them, like, hey, thank you. Like, we got one. The kid had an awesome hunt. Like, really appreciate you letting us hunt. I think that goes a long ways. I think, you know, a lot of guys just go in, hunt, shoot turkeys, leave, and never, and then they go back the next year and ask again. And I think, not that they might not let you hunt, but if they remember me, A, you know, I sent them a nice picture of the turkey. They can remember they had a good experience last year. Hey, this was great. You know, yeah, of course you can go again. I think that's probably the biggest thing for me. Just making sure that, you know, the landowner's happy, I guess, and that I don't step on any toes for any reason. You know, I'm not driving in their fields or on their field roads if they don't want me to. Well, I'm not driving in their fields even if they want me to, honestly, but I'm just going to avoid, follow their rules, honestly. It's their land, and I appreciate that they're going to let me hunt, so I'm going to do what they ask of me. And, not over, you know, overstay my welcome. And, you know, one thing that's a reality for me especially is I'm always getting and losing spots. Like, you know, whether I want to like it, whether it's my fault, which it's not usually, I don't mean to say that, but like, it's, things change, properties sell, different roles change on the properties, whatever. Different farmer rents it, they got the hunting rights, whatever. Pile of things. I just lost a big piece that I've hunted for years. And yeah, it sucks. And it's hard sometimes because we get a little bit emotionally attached to these, you know, pieces of ground that we have these memories and things on. But just the fact of not owning land, this is a fact of it, and you can't be mad, and you can't be mad at the landowner, and you can't throw a stink about it, because it just is what it is. What I'm the first thing I decided after getting the news the other day that I couldn't hunt this big piece anymore, that's full of turkeys, is I'm just going to go find other places to hunt. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'd hunt public. I would hunt, you know, whatever. It doesn't matter to me. I'm just going to find other birds to hunt. And you can't dwell in the sand and hope that, you know, I can't hunt there anymore. So I'm just going to, I guess I won't shoot a turkey this year. There's plenty of turkeys around if you're willing to work for it. And just being respectful to people, you know, if there's some accommodation that they're asking of you, then do it, you know, even if it's, I asked them to hunt first season, but they only said, nope, you can't come in here till after these people are done. Fine. That's fine.
Yep.
Yeah, just being courteous, being respectful, and following up with the landowner, I think is huge. If you can get their phone number. Like last year I went to the spot where, hey, you know, remember me? And they're like, oh yeah, your business card's hanging on our fridge, you know, like stuff like that, where, giving them your information so they have it, and open that line of communication so you can establish maybe a little bit of a relationship with the people. You know, get them, if it's worth it, get them a gift, get them a gift card, you know, to a restaurant, like all these little things that can help you, kind of secure land for more than just, you know, one day or 2 days or whatever, that can also separate you from the rest of the people. And when the next guy comes knocking to ask to hunt, and they might say, hey, I'm happy with who I got here, and I don't, you know, no is the answer. So that's kind of how I approach it. And I guess always trying to find new places to hunt, whether it's a half an hour away, whether it's 2 minutes away. It's, I'm never going to turn down a spot, even if I don't go there till fifth season. Doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. Like, if I can go to hunt fresh birds fifth season, I'm all for it.
Yeah, definitely, dude. Well, and if anything, like, you know, yeah, it sucks to lose a piece, but it's also super fun to go and explore and learn a new one, right? And just get to, you know, continue repeating that process. And I mean, maybe you finally get permission on that piece that you've always drove past for, I mean, since, you know, you were how old, and you're like, oh, you know, I always wondered what was over that hill or what that piece looked like, or holy smokes, there's way more back here than I thought. And yeah, I've always found too, like, if you find sheds, or if you find, you know, even like, you know, I've never been fortunate enough to find rails in any real capacity, but, you know, being willing to stop back up there, and, you know, especially with shed antlers, I found people get really, really excited if you drop off a shed and like, hey, I don't know if you had a picture of this buck or not, but, you know, I found this shed, you know, the kid found it, maybe let the kid keep it, I don't know, but, you know. Yeah. When you show that initiative to the landowner of like, hey, like, I really appreciate you being out here. I found this. Here you go. I know a couple of people who have gotten permission for life pretty much just because of something simple like that. And yeah, you're absolutely right. My go-to last year was dropping off. I went after I killed my last bird. I went out and the day before I left town, grabbed a couple of cases, sixers, a spotted cow, and then plucked a couple of primary wing feathers off them and stuck them in there with the handwritten note and dropped those on the on the porch for everyone. And like, you know, got texts from both of them like, you did not need to do that. That was totally unnecessary. I was like, well, you let me hunt out there, so I appreciate it.
It shows your appreciation. And like, some people, I don't think even realize how much you appreciate it. Like some people just will, you know, especially farmers, they'll be like, oh, it's a turkey. Thank you. You know, like, thank you for hunting here. They're eating my corn. Like, yeah, I get that, but I still appreciate it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. When it's this time of year that we look forward to, you know, the entire rest of the calendar year and, you know, daydream about and everything, like getting that permission is, definitely does not go underappreciated. So
Another thing that I was just thinking about too, that I think, a lot of guys can screw up on, is when I talk to landowners, you know, get permission, I always tell them I'm never going to be by myself. I always am going to have someone with me, a camera guy with me, a kid and a camera guy. I'm almost always going to have someone with me, because I think a lot of people get the wrong they'll go ask permission. Then all of a sudden the landowner sees them out there and there's three guys and they're like, well, why is there three guys out there? Like, he just asked me if he could hunt. And I think that can give people a bad taste, but I'm always very upfront about that. And I always am saying I have a camera guy and usually one other person with me so that they understand that if they see me and two other people or me and one other person, that only one of us is hunting. Like, we're not all out there splitting up and trying to knock over every turkey on the property. Like, we're filming, like, whatever. I just try to make that clear so they understand what I'm doing versus seeing it and then get the wrong idea, or the neighbor calls them, hey, there's three guys walking into your field. You know, that can happen. And I've heard of it happening to other people. And just one thing to be upfront and honest about. And if they don't want you to take anyone else in there, then either don't hunt it or don't take anyone else in there. So that's the way I handle it. But nobody ever has a problem with it when I've told them. Like, it's just, I think it's just the one that people get surprised about and they don't know what you're doing. Is just being honest about that.
Yeah, definitely. That's a great tip, man. Because, that definitely can rub a landowner the wrong way if they know that they gave permission just to Drew and all of a sudden there's Drew and his buddies go running out there,
right?
You know, whoever it is. And they're like, well, wait a minute. Like, I only let one person have permission. Like, you can't all go out there and shoot. Like, that's, it definitely, that'll burn up a relationship quick if you're not being fully transparent with the landowner and everything. Because after all, it's their land, right?
Yeah, for sure.
When it comes to calling sequences in early season, what do you tend to like when it comes to getting those birds that are either flocked up or calling them right down off the roost first thing in the morning?
Well, honestly, I sometimes don't even call at all. If it's a big flock of birds especially, I'm probably not calling at all until they're on the ground and maybe they're looking my direction at the decoys, or maybe they just came out into the field. Sometimes I'll call at them just, you know, a little sparingly just to see if they will, you know, see the decoys and commit. But I think my experience, I've been in a lot of situations with a lot of different people, and I've seen some people that will just pound on the call from the second they get in the blind when it's pitch black out and the birds aren't even gobbling yet. And I think when you get big flocks of birds, if you are going to call that much, in my experience, again, I know everybody has different experience. Maybe something different works for you, and that's totally cool. But in my experience, when you call that much, that lead hen, or, you know, usually there's a boss hen in the group, she's going to go the other way because she doesn't want to lose these toms or this tom to another hen that sounds like she's, you know, mouthy and aggressive. And a lot of times the group will go the other way, or it's just something different. You know, I try to make everything stay as the same as it's been. So if I'm going to sit in my blind and wrench on the call for 45 minutes while they're on the limb, like, is that what they've had happen the last 2 weeks?
Right.
No, it's completely different. It's some, you know, and, you know, I realize they're unpressured, and yeah, it might work. You might get one bird to come in. I'm not going to say that it can't work, because it certainly can. And I've seen it work, to be honest with you. But I've seen a lot of times where they go the other way off the roost, and, or they go off the other way, go the other way. And eventually, you know, if there's enough birds around, one might come in or something like that. But my experience more times than not has been they go the other way. And if I've done my job scouting and everything is the way that I want it, I'm probably not going to call at all. And usually you don't need to. I mean, I would say we kill probably 6 to 8 birds a year and never touch a call. Just strictly off being where they want to be, knowing where they want to be, using the right decoy setup. I like the call, so I usually will at least call at them, you know, when they come into the field or something. But a lot of times, you know, you don't need to. And I think that's probably a misconception. When you have decoys out, you know, of course, it makes a big difference when you have that visual aid. If I was sitting in the timber, would I just sit there and not call? No, I would be calling because they need to come look for something or have some reason to come over here. But if I'm sitting on a field, all it might take is for them to see that decoy and come in. You know, it's not like you ever watch, you know, a group of turkeys, like if they're out in the fields already outside of right away in the morning, like they're usually not just standing there yelping repeatedly. Like,
right.
They're usually pretty quiet. You know, they might gobble occasionally, or, you know, the hens might scrap a little and they'll gobble. But like for the most part, a group of, you know, 20 turkeys, is once they're down off the ground and in the fields settled in, they're usually not overly noisy.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, man, it's tough because, yeah, you definitely, it's so fun when those first couple of gobbles start firing off and then you just want to chime in just a little bit. But you're absolutely right, man. Like, when you're committing to a decoy strategy, letting the decoys do as much work for you as they possibly can, unless you've got that one bird that's like, I mean, you can hear him gobbling over the crest of the hill, but again, he's out of sight. So if you don't have a visual on him, then you kind of need to, you know, coax him over so that he comes to investigate. But as soon as that happens, then, you know, once you see he's coming, dial back and let him come and do his thing, because that's what the turkeys are.
And read their body language. Once I usually am going to wait till they're on the ground to call at them, and then I'm going to see how they react. Did I call and did he gobble right back? Okay, then I might call at him again. Did he stick his head up and look and then come closer? Okay, I'm going to just see what he does. And, you know, you'll notice, like, did he come a little closer every time I called? Okay, then I'm going to keep calling at him. Or, right. You know, did you call once and is he already committed? Did you call once and he's going the other way? I mean, you know, you have, what I think happens a lot too is, especially early, toms will fly down first. They'll get down on the ground and they're going to stand underneath the roost trees or near those hens, and they're going to stand there and gobble their heads off. And guys are sitting there wrenching on the call, thinking, man, why won't these things come in? They're gobbling like crazy. Well, all they're doing is waiting for those hens. And the second those hens fly down, it is like a race to get to where those hens just went to. And they'll just stand there and wait and wait and wait. And I've seen it where they've waited a half an hour. Does not matter. If I'm 80 yards away, they're going to wait for those hens. But if those hens come your direction or get near you, man, you know, take your safety off, because they're coming. But it's just, you know, some weird things that turkeys do is especially when they're flocked up like that, is they're used to being together. Their normal routine, if you especially watch them a couple days, they're going to stand there at the roost and gobble their heads off until those hens fly down. And then it's going to be a race, you know, to get to them. And it's crazy how they will just not move to all of a sudden they're 300 yards away in 5 minutes.
Yep. Yeah, definitely. And it's tough too, because a lot of times we're thinking back to that last turkey hunt, which was maybe week five, week six, even potentially. Totally different game. Birds are totally, I mean, desperate. They're doing all sorts of crazy stuff there. And it's so tempting to want to, like, just jump right back in where you left off. And, you know, that's what, like you said, you know, you get that one boss hen who doesn't want to deal with you or whatever, you know, hen she thinks that you are. She's like, I'm gonna pitch down this morning, screw you, I'm out of here. And
yeah
it's that is so true, man. Just how fast they cover ground first thing in the morning in that early season. We're just like, well, hens are there, I'm out of here. We're done. I love it, man. Well, dude, this has been awesome. I seriously can't thank you enough. I didn't really plan for this to be a youth preseason episode, but I'm super glad that it was, because I learned a ton here. Because I frankly, I've only had one first season tag in my life. Usually I'm a third or fourth season guy, or at least I have been for the last couple of years. So getting into that early season mindset has been fantastic, dude. What do you have on the docket for this upcoming spring? What seasons you got?
Well, I have first and third So it'd be A and C, I guess, in Wisconsin. Mm-hmm. I'm still waiting to find out about the Learn to Hunt. If I'm taking a kid on the Learn to Hunt, usually just depends on how many kids are involved in it or sign up for it. I got at least one person for sure lined up for youth season, and I got a couple backups. If one falls through or we get one on the first morning, I can take someone else the second morning. But then first two seasons are going to be busy. I got four or five tags for people coming with me. So each of those 2 weeks. So after that, it'll kind of slow off a little bit. But I mean, I'll be hunting till, you know, end of sixth season usually. Usually later in the year is kind of my time to just slow down a little, like, you know, hunt more for fun, for leisure, maybe I might even hunt a little bit or have a buddy come in from, you know, out of town or something, and just kind of relax and hunt a little bit. But bulk of my hunting, like really hard getting after it, taking people every day, is the first 2 to 3 weeks. And then after that, I usually like to pump the brakes a little bit and, you know, take maybe 2 people a week or so. But yeah, it's just, I'll be at it all spring, and it just never gets old. And no matter how tired you are, no matter how much you got your butt kicked that day, it's just something about that next morning's hunt that is so exciting about turkey hunting that just, you know, will never get old to me.
Yeah. Absolutely, dude. Well said. Well, man, I'm hoping that I don't have to put another 42 miles on the boots in 2 weeks like I did last year. But if I do, I will do it with a smile on my face. But hopefully, man, we can maybe link up in one of those later seasons and try and get on a bird together and do something again, man, because that was a blast last year. But dude, I know you've got a bunch of prep to do for the Open Season Expo, which will have just happened by the time this came out. But man, I can't thank you enough for your time and just for sharing all your turkey knowledge, and especially for getting all the youngins out in the woods there and introducing more people to the sport. Where can folks go to learn more about you and follow along with your season and of course the Predator Podcast?
So my Instagram is predatorpodcast_Drew. Facebook is my name, Drew Schlim. And I'm going to start putting my turkey hunts from this spring on my podcast YouTube channel. So
sweet.
If you want to see those, subscribe to my Predator Podcast YouTube channel. I am going to try to bring the quality hunts to that channel. I always wanted to keep it separate, but part of my relationship with Fox Pro now is turkey related. So I'm just going to keep it all in one spot, just make it easier, to kind of keep it all under me. And of course my podcast, the Predator Podcast, available on all platforms, YouTube, wherever. But, obviously it's all things predator hunting. I don't really talk about anything else, but if you're into predator hunting or wannabe, I have some really great guests on there that are much, much more knowledgeable than me and can teach us all things. So yeah, I'm looking forward to spring, and hopefully you're able to make it over and we can chase some gobbles around.
Yeah, definitely, dude. And folks, definitely do go check out the Predator Podcast. Even if you're not a predator hunter, the amount you will learn about maybe a niche or a niche, whatever, I don't know, I forget what the proper pronunciation, but about a subsect, let's go with that route, about a specific type of hunting that you maybe haven't tried yet before. Definitely go check that out, and especially the YouTube channel and Drew's social media. You will see some of the gnarliest thermal footage of coyotes getting smoked that you'll find anywhere out there. So be sure to go give Drew a follow. You'll also see a bunch of dead turkeys and probably some dead deer, I imagine, by the end of this year too. But man, I'm stoked for it. Again, man, thank you for taking time to come on the show, man, and I look forward to seeing this weekend.
Thanks, man. Sounds good. We'll see you.
That's all for this week's episode. Thank you so much for tuning in. If you like this episode, be sure to subscribe to this podcast wherever you get your podcasts. And while you're at it, if you could leave me a 5-star review, I would appreciate that a ton. You can also follow along with my outdoor adventures on Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube at The Wisconsin Sportsman. That's also the best way to get a hold of me to suggest topics, guests, or questions you'd like me to explore on this show. Big thanks to our awesome partners, Lone Wolf Custom Gear, Onyx Hunt, Huntworth Gear, Good Chance Fly Fishing, and the Wisconsin chapter of Backcountry Hunters and Anglers. Please go support the brands that support this show. And if you're looking for more awesome outdoor content, go check out thesportsmansempire.com, where you'll find a ton of other awesome outdoor podcasts. And until next time, make sure you make the time to get outside and enjoy the incredible natural resources that are ours as Wisconsin sportsmen.